Jason won that match against Shane, and Shane's a king, and he went up and stood in his chair. You don't stand in the king's chair.
Rob.
You know, golf, you got different courses, you know, but that's not different games. It's the same game, different course.
Rob wants to just rant today, doesn't he? Don't you, Rob?
What's that?
You just want to rant today.
Well, and these are just things I'm just throwing out there right now. You guys can think about, chew on them, sit on them for a week or so or whatever. And, but they're, you know, they're things that I don't have a good picture of in my mind. It's kind of like they're all the stuff is scrambled up in there, and there's got to be a reason inside the game why the game isn't more successful, you know, than it is.
Well, right for now. Everybody tuning
why
in,
is it way more successful. I mean,
for everybody,
a lot more.
For everybody tuning in at this point, we just got the butt end of one of Rob's big long rants. We are here for another episode of the podcast. What's up, Demetrius? Apparently, Demetrius was so bored that Rob put him to sleep.
Whoa, what's that? I'm sorry. Hello. Demetrius here. Who's calling?
Wow. Rob, I think Demetrius was just waking up right there. Somebody get that man a monster so he can wake up.
We're good. How you guys doing this week?
Well, I'm doing terrible. I got back to the gym for the first time in about 3 months after all these VG events. I went back to the gym. I need to get this fat gut under control, and I hurt everywhere. It's brutal. My life sucks. How are you, Rob?
How's your stroke?
Well,
I hear
clogged.
You're giving Kelly Fisher some jumping lessons.
I was able to help Kelly on some jumping. But not too much.
Yeah, Kelly's that's smart. That's going to be exciting.
It actually was pretty cool. I was happy to help her in any way that I could. It's all exciting stuff. All right, well, let's jump right in. We have some announcements to clear up in the beginning. We have a new, well, I shouldn't say a new Patreon because she has been a Patreon in the past, but she has recently upped her tier to the highest tier offered, and this highest tier has been created recently, and I was told by a good source in the industry that this is, and I shouldn't say the pool industry, I should say in the podcasting industry, that this was a good idea to do because it creates a lot of, closeness between you and your Patreons, and we created a $100 tier for the Patreon. Sarah Schmidt, thank you very much. You are the first one who jumped in on that, and what she gets from it is pretty cool, actually. So with this new tier, Sarah is actually going to be able to sit in on one of the interviews that we do, and basically we'll allow her to pick basically whoever she wants to from the industry, as you know, for the most part. Of course, we still have to have access to that person, and they're going to have to want to do it. But we'll get access to a player, and they can actually sit in on the interview and hear and interact with the person themselves. So, you know, if you have a favorite player in the industry that you've always wanted to meet, this would be a pretty good opportunity for you to be able to do that. That's what we're offering up with this super supporter tier on the Patreon. And if you would like to become a Patreon either in this tier or any other tier, we really appreciate the support going forward. This is how we kind of budget and make additions to the podcast and upgrade, you know, different equipment and stuff like that. That's how we're able to do these things. So you can do that at patreon.com/queueitup. And we really appreciate all support from everybody who is able to do that. All right, let's move on to our next topic. And our next topic is going to be the fundraiser for Jeanette Lee. Of course, everybody out there that has a Facebook or a social media probably has seen that Jeanette Lee has been diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer. And I don't really know why it was written this way, but it was, I guess she was declared as terminal. I'm not totally sure the proper way of saying that. Terminal doesn't work with her because she is fighting her butt off and she is not giving up. She is planning on beating this. And I think it's fantastic. And I love her fight. I love her drive. And they set up a legacy fund for her and her daughters for the worst case scenario. We are going to be running a fundraiser to help raise money for that. So for the next week, we are going to be donating 100% of all profits from our clothing to that Jeanette Lee Legacy Fund. We have currently raised already $50 in the first day, which is okay. I was hoping to raise about $500. So hopefully when this gets out there and you guys listen to it, maybe if you're interested and you've wanted some Cue It Up apparel regardless, you can head over to our website, which is cueituppodcast.com. And you can check out the tab for the shop. And if you would like to get yourself a t-shirt or a hoodie, a black hoodie, please order that through me. So reach out to the podcast, whether it's on cueituppodcast.com or whether it's through Facebook or whether it's through a personal message to me, Rob, Demetrius, whoever you can get a hold of, for a t-shirt or a black hoodie. Order that through me because those are significantly higher profit margins than the third party that handles the rest of our website. But if you want to order something else through the website, you can do that through the tab that's shop on the website. And anything that you order, 100% of that profit is going to go straight to Jeanette Lee in the name of Cue It Up Network and the people who support the Cue It Up Network. So if that's of interest, please do that. And if you have any more questions on that, again, please reach out to myself, Rob, Demetrius, the website, the Facebook page, wherever, and we can get you all the information you need on that. Let's see if we can't raise some money for Jeanette Lee and her legacy fund. All right, let's move on from that to the merger and kind of what it looks like going forward. As of right now, we are all pretty fired up to be happy to be working together. I know we are basically coming out with between 3 and 4 episodes a week, which is pretty cool. That's a lot of content for you guys to get out there with the Cue It Up subscription. So if you're not subscribed to the Cue It Up podcast, please do it on your whatever, you know, basic spot that you listen to all your podcasts on, whether it's Apple iTunes, whether it's Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to regularly, make sure you're subscribing so that you can get updated with all these new episodes. And basically, we're going to try to continue firing at about 3 episodes per week for you guys between Demetrius, myself, Nick, and Mike. And then, of course, Rob when he's joining in on these ones. So lots of exciting stuff. We had a meeting this week, and that's what we're going to try to aim for. So I figured I would share this on here just so you guys all knew that. And we can move on to our shout-outs now. Rob, would you like to go first with your shout-out?
Yeah, sure, I can. I'm going to go into the three-cushion billiard industry for pool here a little bit. And most three-cushion players are familiar with the USA three-cushion organization that was started by Mazen Shuni. And that's who my shout-out is to. Mazen Shuni owns a place called Amazing Billiards in Malden, Massachusetts. He's got snooker tables there, 9-foot pocket pool tables, and 10-foot billiard tables in the place. And he is a very charity-minded fella. And he puts on events and donates the money to different charities, memorial events and things like that. His purpose with starting this newer three-cushion organization, the USA three-cushion, was to incorporate a type of a handicapping system into events. With three-cushion tournaments have always been, you just go and play, and whatever you are. Well, he's, in the last 2 years now, he has put on numerous events where you are racing to a certain number based on what your average is in the game. So if you have a 0.5 average, you'll go to 20 points, and if a guy is a 0.6, he'll go to 23, if a guy is a 0.7, you know, that type of thing, which is unique and has only been around for the last couple of years, a handicap three cushion billiard tournament. So he has one of his main venues for this type of event is at Casino del Sol in Tucson, Arizona, which is just a outstanding venue. And he has got professional streaming going on during this also. And he does run these same three cushion tournaments in other places. You can, if you have a pool that has three cushion tables and you want an event there, he will work with you to set that up. He's done one in Chicago, I think maybe two. He is doing one now this next month out at his pool room, Amazing Billiards in Massachusetts. And him along with a couple other guys, semi shout outs to Bruce Vensky and Bob Keller from Wisconsin, who basically Bob Keller started a three cushion club in Madison, Wisconsin. And the newest news on that now is if you're not living in Dane County, which is right around Madison where the club is, if you're from any other county, to be a member in this three cushion billiard club now in Madison, it's $480 a year, not $850. So they have cut the out of county fees for belonging to this billiard club almost in half. And Bob Keller basically donates, you know, at least 50% of his own personal funds to keep the place running, up and running. So the more people that can get to join from out of the area, the better too. But anyhow, there's my shout out and a half, you could call it.
All right, and Demetrius?
I will shout out to Don Baker from Texas. This gentleman, he came up for a boot camp almost a year ago, and we were just getting kicked off, and he had a kind of an emergency come up where to the level where he had to fly home and not do the boot camp. That's neither here nor there, but everything worked out really well, and I'm happy for that. But it was a long time, and we were able to get him back up here last week. So after it took us a full year and for schedules to align and everything to come together, he got up here last week and we trained. We had a blast. It was a total pleasure and one of the most fun times I had. I also thought it was amazing because after training, I'm not going to get into exact age, but he's older than me. He's no spring chicken. And I'll tell you, after training from 9:30 until, 9:30 in the morning till after 10 at night, and then playing a set of 10 ball, we'd finish every day by playing a set of 10 ball, wrap up at 11:30 or so. And this guy would stay on the table and hit balls for another hour, practice stuff that we worked on. And he did that. I mean, he was playing until almost 1 in the morning. He did that both day one and day two, late in the night, which, day one, people are usually pretty pumped up. But usually by day two, I couldn't believe it, man. So what a passionate pool enthusiast. That's just got to be some kind of record. So anyway, good times. Thanks for making it such a priority to get up here. And I'm glad pool and everything is going really well for you, Don.
Man, if I liked the game that much, I'd be twice the player I am today, huh?
Woof.
All right. Well, my shot is going to go to Roy Francisco. This is famous by Roy's Basement. And, of course, Roy's always supported me in what I've done here quite a bit. But on top of that, he is going to send me one of his bike jerseys. There's limited edition bike jerseys that basically only the people that are a part of his inner bike circle, which he's, if you pay attention to him, during the COVID shutdown, he has basically taken up mountain biking, which is interesting. And he had limited edition, only a few made Roy's Basement bike jerseys. And he's sending me one, which is super cool. And I think that was just awesome. And I can't wait to get it and to sport it off. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to be able to wear that one around and, make all of the Roy's Basement fans that are friends with me as well jealous that I get one and they don't. So thanks, Roy. It was awesome gesture, and I'm excited to get it. All right, with that, let's jump right into the podcast.
Woo-hoo!
All I don't know if we're supposed to be still doing this ad, but I think it's a lot of fun. And from what I've heard, everybody laughs their entire time we do this. So here we are, Manscaped ad. What was that?
That was a lawnmower, you idiot.
Oh, it sounded like a broken chainsaw. Rob, you officially have your lawnmower 3.0.
Yes, and but what I want to say, my wife came home the other day. I told her all about the lawnmower 3.0, and of course she looked at me with her eyes crossed. She came home. She goes, did a little shopping the other day. Came home and said, I went to Target. You know what I saw? Well, I have no idea, honey. She said, I saw the Manscaped there. I said, Manscaped, they're right on the shelf, right out in the open, and it was a picture of a man's face. And he was trimming his beard. And I went, yeah. Okay. So, I don't know what her point was, that, you know, you can use this to fix yourself all over the place, wherever you have hair. But you got hair. Some people got hair all over the place. So, you know, I mean, escape yourself. That's what it is. It's not an escape. It's a like the moonscape, you know, or it's the bodyscape. It's the manscape. It's perfect. Rev up that lawnmower 3.0.
Vroom, vroom.
Yeah, there. Now have at it, baby. I love it.
All right, Demetrius, you've had an opportunity. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll go with Robin. So I'm going to stick with the let's just stick with the beard and mustache for now. We'll just talk about that. We'll just say that this thing's amazing because I would say this. I want you guys to remember what it was like when you first tried a jump cue. You know, up until then, you know, you just were kind of playing with a house cue. You know, if you're maybe had your own two piece cue for the first time and you could jump a little bit. And then somebody lets you try a jump cue, and you're like, man, this thing goes over the ball like it's not even there. That is the difference where it's like totally – this is true. It's small. It's convenient. It's very, very – it's just everything is like really focused. It just does a better – it just does a better job than anything I've seen. And the difference would be compare, you know, what it would be like to, you know, not clear a ball and give a ball in hand. Except instead of giving a ball in hand, if you don't have the right tool, you're like sawing off your nose. It's like you don't want to saw off your nose. And so that's not acceptable. We need to get over the ball here. We need to not give a ball in hand. So I'm of the opinion you need the right tool, and the 3.0 will clear. It'll get the job done.
Was that pun intended?
That was a good one. So how many jump cues have you had, Nate? Did you ever have a cue called the frog?
I actually did. That was my first ever playing cue. Cause it was
green.
Yeah,
it was called the frog. Green with a black butt.
I had a black one with a green.
Robin Dobson, the frog?
Yeah, I had a black one with a green grip. But I played pool with that for like the first.
A tool like the Manscaped, that would be like the first one you've ever tried?
Well, yeah. It's
because this is the first one I've ever tried.
They're the best.
So it's got to be the best one I've ever tried.
Yeah, well... Talking points. Fun time. Manscaped is now launched in the UK, so all of my UK fans or listeners can get it as well. Chris Alexander, I gave you a shout-out last time. You laughed at me when I did that. I'll do it again. Chris, you could get yourself this if you really wanted to. The Manscaped has...
Yeah.
What?
What's in, though, too? It's a four-day growth, three-day growth.
Yeah, exactly.
Women come out of the woodwork.
Rob's had to repair his windows three times from women, running.
Oh, they're peeping in all over. They just want to watch me do it.
Yeah, of course. Weird. The Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team has perfected the greatest ball trimming hair ever created, and just released its new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. This third-generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. When I tell you it's premium, I mean premium. The battery will last up to 90 minutes, so you can take a longer shave. Rob, you can set the mood. You can throw some rose petals down. You can set up some sweet slow jazz, and you can just shave for 90 minutes at a time.
Where I noticed it for me the most, I mean, I have to take garden shears to trim my eyebrows. That's how old I am. And this thing, it's like one pass, boom, on one side, one pass on the other, and I am slicked right up. My eyebrows are perfect.
Perfect. And its waterproof technology allows you to groom in the shower. One of the coolest features is the LED lights, which illuminates grooming areas for a closer and more precise trimming. We've also upgraded our 7,000 RPM motor with quiet stroke technology. And let's not forget about the charging stand. Show your mower off loud and proud, because this intelligently designed stand is a convenient charging dock powered by USB. If you're listening to me speak right now, I want you to experience it firsthand for yourself. Let's get that bush to tush clean. Make your testies their besties. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code QITUP at manscaped.com. That is 20% off plus free shipping with the code QITUP at manscaped.com.
I was jumping.
All right. Well, we are still in COVID 2020, now extended into COVID 2021. So we still don't have a lot to talk about as far as upcoming events, but we do have what was announced to be a really big gambling match coming up this week between Fedor Gorst and James Aranis, which we will be talking about today. But before we do that, let's wrap up the women's VG9 event that we just did. Rob, you watched quite a bit of this, and I think
I did.
Demetrius, did you watch a decent amount of it?
No, I've been training very, very, very heavily, and then just have not gone back and watched it. I'm very curious. I'm going to at least check out the finals for sure, but I did not get to see any of it.
Well, pretty darn exciting, the finals were.
Yeah, the finals were really good. Rob, why don't you give us your thoughts about it? Rob, why don't you give us your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think the whole thing was really good. I enjoy watching the women play, and the quality of play that you do see with them is really exceptional. These ladies that were in this tournament, this VG9, are great players, all of them, every single one of them. And you could see the nervousness of at the start of the tournament, you know, the first couple of games in each round. You could see how they were tight. You know, they were just—they're not used to the situation, and how as time went on, and how the ones who advanced became more at ease, and played better. You know, overall. But yeah, it was it's just exceptional to watch. Kelly Fisher is just wonderful to watch by pool. If anybody out there who just wants to see pattern play, cue ball positioning. Perfectly, her game is a great example of that, and I just enjoyed the heck out of it, especially the finals, which was, you know, coming back, Margaret coming back from, you know, being down that first set and then being down the second set and coming back and actually winning it was pretty exciting. I know you had as being a commentator, Nate, had said, boy, this would be so exciting if this happened. And there it is. Then it happens. So you almost predicted the excitement of having a third set.
Yeah. I mean, I always want to have it go the distance, because obviously that's the most exciting part of the game, is to see how the competitors compete under the pressure and how they handle it. And plus we get to watch more pool that way. So it's a little bit more boring if you watch 2-0. I mean, that's no fun. So,
No, that made it special. And just her, Kelly's position play and her, you know, her pattern play is just, it's just so perfect. She's just on the right side of the ball every single time. And she never has a shot over 25 degrees angle to shoot, or, you know, they're all about the same. She gets that cue ball where you need to get it to have an easier shot, where you can have another easy shot on your next ball. It's just, she's just great at it. It's fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, so I guess we can give the results of what happened. Kelly Fisher is your winner. She beat Margaret Fifalova in the finals. Third, fourth went to Yuki Hiraguchi and Elul Kibaroglu. I had to think about that one for a second, but I got it. It took me a while to learn that name, but I got it. So
yeah, these ladies have such pleasant personalities too. I mean, when you talk to them in between the matches,
yeah, oh yeah,
definitely. They're gracious and they're just sweethearts, all of them.
Yeah, yeah, they're all super nice. And then fifth, sixth went to Ina Coplin and Kristina Zlateva. So pretty good showing for all of the ladies. It was a lot of fun to do. It was a great event. If I don't get out of the industry as far as streaming, I know it seems like every time I do a stream, I say I'm getting out of the industry right after this, and then next thing you know, I'm doing another one. So I don't even know what's happening with my life at this point. But I do want to talk about one event later on that I hope to be doing. So we'll see if it happens and goes through with it. I think it probably will. But yeah, I guess we can kind of wrap this up there. I don't have too much else to say. I would say there's two really, really must-see matches. So this could be for you, Demetrius. Two matches that I think are must-see is Kristina Zlateva versus Kelly Fisher in the opening round. I thought that was the best played match of pool that a VG event has ever seen. Maybe short of Tyler Steyer versus Fedor Gorst or Nick Malai versus Albin Ocean, which were the two semifinals of the original VG10. This match right there was right up in there. It was a fantastic match to watch. Those are kind of must-see. And then the finals with Margaret and Kelly from set two on was really, really, really top-notch as well, especially that second set. It was extremely well played. So I would say that those are the ones that you probably want to watch if you're interested and didn't get to watch any of it and wanted to catch some of the good matches. I would definitely highly advise those ones. All right, let's move on to Fedor and Didi. Dodong Diamond, James Aranis, whatever you want to call him. This one is going to be just a fantastic matchup. I think it's going to be really, really, really good. It is a four-day event. This is going to be on March 11th and 12th at 7 p.m. Eastern time. March 13th and 14th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. This is going to be at First Break Sports Bar and Grill in Sterling, Virginia, which is the home room of Roy. And it's going to be four different disciplines. So March 11th is going to be a 9-ball race to 30. March 12th is going to be a 10-ball race to 25. March 13th is an 8-ball race to 25. And March 14th is going to be a 1-pocket race to 10. So I guess let's tackle these individually, and then we can kind of talk about the match as a whole. March 11th, 9-ball race to 30. Demetrius, what are you looking for? Who you think the favorite of that 9-ball matchup is, and any other thoughts on that individual day's matches?
Well, I've got to go. You know, this is a tough match, for everybody, but I've got to give the nod to Fedor here in the rotation side of things, especially, 9-ball. I don't know the break rules. I would assume that they're racking 9 on the spot. I just think that, Fedor has, played Euro Tour. He's got the break working for the 9-ball. And I think he's, in my opinion, the best jumper in the world, which when it comes to, the moving game, I think that gives him an edge there. And I just, it's going to be tough. Like, it doesn't have to go his way, but, race to 30, definitely, we saw that when Aradas played filler, Aradas won day one or, at least got a big lead. So it's like, it's not like Aradas is drawing dead. I'm not going to bet the farm on this one, but I think that, so the edge is not as big as if it was a race to 100, but I think that there's there is an edge for Fedor here.
Rob, what you thinking?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking how much fun it's going to be to see who performs the best and what game they play. The end results at the end to analyze, look back and see, okay, James won the one pocket by doing this or doing that. And in advance of trying to see who's going to come out on top, I would give the edge to Federer on probably overall. for just experience and skill. But James is no, you know, he's not going to take the backseat by far in some of these, and maybe even win the whole thing. I don't know. I mean, they're both excellent. So it's going to be fun to the analysis of the different genres are going to be is going to be fun to do.
Yeah, which we
and
will
the
be
games
getting
will
to
be fun to watch because the ones going to 100, although the analysis can be a little different on that, the watching actually taking the time to visually watch that whole thing is time consuming and difficult to do. Where this would be a little better. Going to 30, I like that better. Going to 25, I like that. Going to 10 in one pocket, I like that. It's not a, you know, a mind-boggling all-day thing.
Yeah. Well, I agree on that. I think I've always personally been a big advocate in race to three sets or best three out of five sets race to 25. I've always liked that format more than the race to 100. But, of course, I like the race to 100 as well. So I just like pool, and both are fine. So I guess looking at the nine ball, I would say if I can give any edge to James in the nine ball portion of this, James is somebody who really likes to start out fast. We saw that when he played against Joshua Filler. We saw that when he plays his matchup against Eklund Tkachi, as well as who did he play in? Alex Pagulayan. He played Alex Pagulayan as well. He always jumps. He's really, really, really good at jumping out fast in matches. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he may have actually even beat Joshua Filler in the race to 30 part of their race to 100. I might be wrong on that.
No, that's what I said. Yeah, he won day one. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, if Fedor comes out a little bit slow, James definitely could, you know, pop out there and, you know, sneak this one in there before James kind of, Fedor kind of gets settled in on day two, potentially. But I can't predict that. I would say that the race at 30 should be a lot closer because of that. I would say maybe 30 to 26 or something like that, Fedor. What do you guys think?
Yeah, and I, one thing I think I would add to that is that I actually think that there's going to be, I think that at this level, the way these guys break the balls, I think that nine ball is a tougher game for them than 10 ball in terms of like just coming up with shots after the break. You know, when they're using that cut break and the one ball is tracking three rail, you know, the one ball is going in or going up table, depends on how they play it, of course. But the bottom line is I think it's harder to control the layouts and harder to control whether you get a shot. You can run the cue ball, you know, if the cue ball is moving around, sometimes it hits below the rack, hits the nine and Kieran's up table. So I expect that we're going to see more moving games of the nine ball than we are in the 10 ball. And that if it comes, if there's more breaks that are unpredictable, no shot on the one, safeties, push outs, kicks, jumps. I said that Fedor has a jumping edge, but I do think that that might be good for James because I think that if it comes down to where there's not these big runaway trains and it's more, you know, nobody's putting together threes and fours and fives, and it comes to kind of like a rack here, two racks there, coming up with shots, grappling for shots. Like you said, I think James is going to be really, really smooth, and he's going to be very hard to beat if it's nip and tuck and kind of, you know, movie and short. I think Fedor is a racehorse where if you get these long stretches of just, you know, race to 100, 10-ball break, that's where I think he can really lose anybody in the world. But in a short match, a nine ball where the balls are being uncooperative and unpredictable, I think James could stand real well. So, I mean, I think that he's got a much better chance of winning. I wouldn't even call it stealing. I think he has a much better chance. He's much more alive in the nine ball, I feel.
Yep, I agree. All right, so let's move on from the nine ball to the 10 ball. And I start this one if you guys don't mind. James is a great 10 ball player. It's not like he is a scrub by any stretch of the imagination. He is incredibly talented. Fedor is on a different level right now. Fedor's 10 ball game might be the best in the world. If it's not, I mean, it's darn close. I give the nod to Fedor in this one, probably something like 25 to 16, 25 to 17, something like that. I think Fedor is going to put some packages together. Especially if it's going to be template break and it's not going to be rack here. If it's a wood rack, we can start talking about potentially a little bit more. But I think if it's template break, I like Fedor 25-16, 25-17, somewhere in that range. I like him to win kind of comfortably in the 10 ball. Demetrius?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is correct. I do think the fact that it's a race at 25, and you know what you've already said about James, I think that that changes things because I think it makes it a little bit closer. Like, in other words, if they played a race to 100, I think that maybe, you know, Fedor could win, you know, 100 to 70 or something. But so 70% of 25, oh boy, why do I do this to myself? What's 70% of 25?
What's 70% of 25?
16. It's probably like 17 and a half. 17 and a half. That sounds right. Yeah. So if it's 17 and a half, then you could say, well, he's going to win, you know, 25 to 17 or 25-18, kind of like what you're saying. But I feel like because the set's short, he's not going to be able to kind of hit these long strides. Everything's a little bit more of a sprint, not a marathon. So I think it might even be a hair closer. So I think that, you know, the 9 ball is going to be a real scrap, but I think that 30 to 26, Fedor is a good prediction. This one, I think, is going to be a win for Fedor, but I'm not sure he wins by more than, like, I'd say by 5 or 6 games, you know, 20, 25 to like 20 or 19.
I'll go along with both of those predictions, pretty close. 25-20, 25-21, maybe.
And I absolutely
30,
25, agree. 30-26. Yeah, and I absolutely agree that he is got to be, you know, if he's not you can't really give him best in the world until he's, you know, got there with Filler or Shane or Chang in a race to 100, but that's the match that I think we're all kind of dying to see is Fedor and Filler. That's a different conversation, but I have a pick there, but we'll save that one.
Yeah. Well, I think it'd be fascinating. I think it'd be awesome. All right, let's move on then to the 8 ball. And now the wrench gets thrown right into the gears, and who really knows what's going to happen? Because I honestly don't think I've seen James play some 8-ball. I don't know if I've ever seen Fedor play 8-ball. Have either of you?
No, I've never seen either of these guys play 8-ball, so now you're going to hear me completely bluff.
All right, so let's just put on our BS caps and try to act like we're really smart when we have no idea what the heck we're talking about. This kind of comes down to I'm taking James Aranis in the 8-ball, and I'm taking James in the 8-ball only because of his one-pocket prowess, and I have to assume that he's a little bit better at moving around in the kind of pattern play. I honestly don't know. I mean, 8-ball, it's a lot easier to predict with American players when you know that they have, you know, playing those patterns and seeing those patterns, it's a real thing. And, you know, the game of 8-ball is, I don't think, very popular in Europe, certainly less popular in Europe than it is in the U.S. And I have to assume with all the games that they play in Russia that it's even less popular in Russia than it is in the whole of Europe. I'm not saying it's not, you know, not played at all, but certainly just less so than in the U.S. So I'm going to give the edge to James just because of his one pocket, I would say.
Yeah, I'm even Steven with these two guys on 8-ball. And that would be probably, even if I had seen them play, and I have not seen them play 8-ball. But yeah, it's not going to be a margin of 6-7 games. That's for sure. It's going to be closer than that.
This one is really, really hard to call. The only thing I'd say is I doubt that Fedor has played a ton of 8-ball. But I would be surprised if he didn't have some massive straight pool runs. And if you can run hundreds of balls in straight pool, which I'm assuming that this guy can do in his sleep, then I think that makes you very, very, very dangerous when it comes to 8-ball, especially when you're playing 8-ball on a big table. You know, you're breaking. He has a good break, so he's going to be breaking well, picking through racks with open balls and lots of space. You know, this is not a congested bar table. Right. And then at the same time, you know, what makes 9-foot, you know, 9-foot 8-ball is usually easier. Except for the fact that if it's got tight pockets, but as good as these guys shoot, right, that's not really going to slow them down. So I think that, you know, Fedor could kind of get some kind of a runaway train going in the 8-ball. I was originally leaning kind of towards Aranis just based on, you know, kind of moving and grit. And if it kind of gets a little nip and tuck, I kind of like his edge of it if it gets kind of grindy. And I can definitely see where, Fedor could get to the spot where, you know, if he's not completing runouts and the balls are tying up and he's kind of getting out of his rhythm and not really, like, I think that Aranis would handle that type of situation better. But I just think that he just shoots too straight. And when you've got somebody that's exactly the number one player in the world. Like, I don't know that anyone is striking the balls any better. So than Federer. So it's like when you have exactly that, it's just hard to bet against him. I think he can make the eight ball a runaway train. I think he can shoot so straight and break so well between his striking and his breaking. I just don't even see it getting nip and tuck. I see this being a run out game, and I think that I have to go with a better striker. So originally, I think that if they did something, do we know, is it take what you make, or do we not know that? Because I think
is it winner breaks or not?
Well, this is the problem with all these things, and there's so many dang variations of these games that we have no idea what any of them are. And they don't say it. They don't say it on the poster.
I would say this: if we were using like take what you make, and if we were playing on a really tricked out tight pocketed table, and if we were playing with a wood rack, and you had a bunch of stuff, like you'd really, really, really have to slow this pace of this eight ball down. And then if it was really, really grindy, like a kind of game that Justin Bergman would set up, then I would go with Aranis. But if it's just, you know what, slick, slidey cloth and you know, Roy's basement and comfortable pockets and everyone's breaking like, you know, like a maniac, I think I'm just gonna keep going with Gorst. I'm just gonna ride the guy that I think strikes the balls better.
Yeah. Rob, do you have anything else to add?
That's pretty much what I'd say. Yeah, the same thing. It's he's just a more definitive ball striker, I think, all in all. Overall, his pool prowess is just an edge, just a hair better, I think. Maybe his experience also, you think? But I don't know. James has played a lot of big matches. I mean, he's been there, but I watched him the one match, and I watched the way he kind of emotionally imploded in that one match, and once I saw that, I said, well, that can happen to anybody, but that I keep going back to that, where it looked like mentally he kind of just gave up at one point.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on then to the one pocket race to 10. I don't know, Rob, would you like to start with this one?
One pocket. I'm going to bail out on this one because, I have not seen either one of these guys play much one pocket, and it's such a different game. I just wouldn't be able to bet on either one of these guys in one pocket, seriously.
Okay, well, Demetrius, would you want to go first or second?
I'll hit it real quick because I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, I haven't seen either play substantial amounts of one pocket, so in the end, I'm going to go with Aranis on this one. Unlike the eight ball, this is definitely going to be moving, you know, and they both shoot good enough. It's going to come down to generating opportunities. I know James can do it. I also feel like he's going to be extremely motivated. It's, you know, one thing about this is that if he loses all three or two out of three of the first three matches, he's going to be very motivated. And I just feel like he's going to have a lot to prove, and that this is going to be his best opportunity to prove it. So I think there's going to be an experience edge, a moving edge, and a motivation edge. And I'll pick Aranis here.
Yeah. I have seen James play a decent amount of one pocket, and I haven't seen Fedor play any. In fact, I don't think he has really played all that much at all. So I think James wins the one pocket probably pretty comfortably. It kind of comes down to, can Fedor with his talent kind of overpower James's experience on the table, like Josh was able to do against Tony Chohan. Joshua Filler was able to do against Tony Chohan. I don't think that there's enough of a talent gap between James and Fedor on the pool table to be able to make up for that difference that Joshua Filler was able to basically make up for with Tony Chohan. So I think that James Aranis wins this one pocket pretty comfortably, maybe 10-4, 10-5, something like that. So I guess in total, I have James losing the nine ball, but I could see how it could be close. I would say that Fedor probably wins the nine ball and the 10 ball comfortably. And I would say maybe James wins the eight ball, although I'm not really sure on that, probably wins it close. And I would say he wins it comfortably in the one pocket. So I give the total nod to maybe 2-2 overall. What do you think, Demetrius?
I'm going 3-1. Gorst, and I feel like my big decider, it's not that he's got such a dominant striking edge, although he does play and break. He breaks just a little better and plays just a little better in terms of rotation than any, not just than Aranis. And I'm a big Aranis fan, but just in terms of anybody. But on top of that, I'm going to give him my 2-year rule bonus, which is, you know, for those haven't tuned in for a long time. I really believe that you got to look at somebody's momentum in their career, and that when somebody first breaks out of the scene and starts winning majors and starts getting in the ring and winning money matches, that there's this like, hey, I can do this. And I call it like the Mario, the Super Mario invincibility star. And if you look at like when Josh Filler caught his gear, like nobody could beat him for 2 years. And we saw that with Mika back in 07, 08. We see this from time to time where somebody usually, that was a little different. Mika had been around and then suddenly kind of broke through. But a lot of times, you know, when somebody first makes it on the major stage, there's just a couple of years where they're riding so high, you kind of want to stay out of their way. And I'm a big, big, big Aranis fan. I really admire the fact that he challenged Filler and now he's challenging Federer. I mean, what does that say about Aranis and how good does he play? Of course, I'm a big Aranis fan. But when Federer is, you know, a year out having, you know, won the last world championship at nine ball and just, you know, winning, I mean, what, 166 in his last money match. I mean, he's playing so, he's just so, everything is so peaked right now. You just got to stay out of his way. He wins 3-1.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Demi on that. 3-1, and but I think the one pocket's going to be closer than 10-4. It's more like 10-7, 10-8.
I think that there's pretty much two locked points in, and I think that's Federer winning the 10 ball, and I think it's Aranis winning the one pocket. From there, I give the favor to Federer in the 9 ball, and a slight favorite to James in the 8 ball. But yeah, I could see Federer winning the 8 ball too for a 3-1. But I'll go with 2-2 just because it's fun to be a contrarian. So
be the fun guy.
Yeah, of course. All right, so let's move on from that. That's a pretty exciting match. Again, it's going to be the 11th through the 14th, so some pretty exciting stuff there for us. I guess it's only about a week away. All right, so the next thing we want to talk about is actually the event that I'm potentially, hopefully, doing next, which would be the VG Battle of the Sexes. And basically, the reason I want to talk about it here is I want to get your guys' opinion on this and see what your thought of the format is, and who do you think might be the favorite in it. So the format is for the VG10. The men are going to play the VG10 style, and the women are going to play the VG9 style. So the VG10 basically is you break a rack of 10 ball with a template rack with a fixed pattern, and you get ball in hand guaranteed. And if you run out, you get 1 point. If you don't, you get 0 points. So it's the true ghost rules. The women are playing the same, but with 9 ball instead of 10 ball. And basically how it's going to work is the same exact format as the VG, but instead of balls potted for tiebreakers, we'll do balls percentage potted so that we could be fair on that one. So I guess, Demetrius, what do you think of the format, and who do you think it favors?
Well, is the one – I didn't see the VG9, as I mentioned. Was the one being racked on the spot or the 9 being racked on the spot?
The one is on the spot.
Okay, so then my opinion is that I got to go with the women, because a couple things. With the one on the spot, you're kind of guaranteed to make the wing ball, which means that you can actually take power off your break, really make sure that you get good spreads. So you're going to have 8-ball layouts with good spreads. And then I just feel that you should have, if not 100% break success percentage, it should be very, very close to that.
I should say this.
And so,
hold on one second, because we are playing by the 3-point rule as well. So you have to clear 3 balls across the head string. So you can't soft break. You can soft break. You get one opportunity to. So if you don't get balls across the head string, you get one more opportunity to do so. But if you do it twice in a row, which it happened a few times, including to Pia Filler when she needed a break and run to make the playoffs, she unfortunately had 2 3-point violations. So you can't soft break. You can soft break, but you're really running into the risk of that.
I'll just speak. I'll say that there's going to be a bunch of women playing. Some of them might not put the break together correctly. I feel like as rough as I struggle with the 10-ball break at times, if I played this 9-ball format, I would have it down to where I made that wing ball every time, floated floated multiple balls past the head string, no problem, and had open layouts with nothing really tied back up again. So I'd be looking at 7 or 8 ball layouts with ball at hand. And if you could get somebody that's generating, you know, so it's for me, it's not just one percentage where it's like, hey, what's the break? You know, what's the successful break percentage? It's what's the successful break percentage? And then out of those breaks, how many, you know, what's your average balls and how good are the patterns? How runnable are they? And I feel that if you can spread the, if you have 100% break success with a good spread of 7 and 8 ball runs, I feel that the top women today are going to eat those up like Pac-Man pellets. And that as good as the men break and play, it's going to put so much heat on their 10 ball break and their gameplay. I just don't know that it's, and if they were playing some race to 100 where they're ducking and moving and playing heads up and, you know, gambling and stuff, then maybe the men have a little bit of advantage still at the top level. Maybe there's something there, but when you're just playing the table, playing the ghost format, and it's just about scoring those points, I don't think that the men play enough better to where they're going to run out 10 ball racks with inconsistent patterns and inconsistent breaks. And I know that the top men are going to be breaking really well, but it's just a big hill to climb, man. So I think that the women are going to be extremely, especially the women that have the break best solves, are going to be very hard to beat. I am curious to go back and see Kelly's finals match and see what her runout percentage was, but I'm guessing it was pretty daunting.
Yeah, it was pretty high. Who was Nate? Who was the lady in the VG9 that was making the 8 ball every single game in the same corner pocket? Practically every single game.
On the
she
break?
Had the same shot on the 8 ball in the corner pocket. She'd run the rack down the 8, and she'd have the 8 in one of the lower corners.
Oh, yeah, that was Christina Zlotova.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because that was something that really stood out. And I know the commentators even mentioned something like, gee whiz, there's the 8 in the corner again, this time this rack. And she was making balls on the break.
This is an interesting concept. Let's talk about it because let me give the rest of the format really quickly. There's going to be 32 players, 16 men, 16 women. There will be 2 women in each pool, each 4-person pool, and 2 men in each 4-person pool. So of the 4 players, 2 will be men, 2 will be women. Whoever makes the playoffs and whoever moves on from there will move on from there. And you know, if we end up having an all men playoffs or we have an all women's playoffs, That's how it goes. So that's basically the entire format of what I'm hoping to put together. Now, let's talk about, I guess, we have a VG9 and we have a VG10. The VG10, we had a 20 out of 24 for table runs. We had an 18 out of 24. We had, I think, 2 17s or 3 17s out of 24. And we had, I believe, 3 16 out of 24. So basically, the amount of racks needed to make the playoffs was 16. There was nobody below that for the that made the playoffs, unless
I got 15, didn't I? I thought I got in there with 15.
did you and Wojtek both have 15 then? The 15, it was either 15 or 16 that had the lowest.
Yeah, I think 15.
Okay, so it was 15. Okay, so 15. You and Wojtek had 15. That was the lowest. So now we had a $200 bonus for the women. Whoever broke and ran the most amount of racks in the qualifiers got a $200 bonus. There was a tie for that for first place, and that was so each player got $100, and that was Margaret Fofolova and Elul Kibaroglu, and that was for 15 racks. So out of 24 racks, the most that was ran by the women was 15, and it was a tie. Mm. So there was a 20, an 18, a couple 17s, a couple 16s for the men. And there was actually, I think there was even a 17 or an 18 that didn't even qualify from the men. So
I guess, you know what, Nate, and I guess I didn't know is, you know, which women are playing. Because to be fair, if you've got Albert Ocean and some of the, you know, the top men of the world playing in the 10 ball, and then you've got women that are, you know, like Margaret and Kelly Fisher are phenomenal players, but there's also, you know, they're not exactly, you know, they're not like Siming Chen where they're, you know, like if Siming was playing in this format, she wins. Like, that's my opinion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so it just depends on what, of you course. Know, what the caliber of women players that are participating versus what caliber. Because if you've got the second tier women players against the first tier men players, then maybe the men can outrun that.
Yeah. Well, of course, we don't have a sign-up list yet. So I guess I more or less just wanted to get you guys' opinion on as a whole, we could talk about what do you guys think of the format. I know you already said that you kind of favor the women, and maybe I do kind of favor a a Kelly Fisher and a Jasmine Ocean in that style of format. But I mean, no disrespect to any of the women's players. I don't favor any of the second tier women against the top tier men. So the Fedors or the Albins or something like that. But at the same time, I don't favor any of the second tier men against the first tier women. I don't favor I'm not going to say any names because then it just gets disrespectful. But the idea is the second tier men. I think I don't favor them against a Kelly Fisher either. So I think the cream rises to the top. And who do you like again? You know, a Kelly Fisher versus an Albin Ocean in the finals of an event like this. I mean, I think it's awesome. Who knows?
I think it's great. I think it's a great format, and I'll make one prediction. Yeah. It's hard to know without, like you said, without knowing the player list, and it is. I mean, how do you? It doesn't matter what game they play; it's hard to beat some of those performances by the VG10. You know, like if Albin runs, you know, I mean, it's just ridiculous to run 22 out of 24. I don't even want to talk about it. It's just unbelievable. But but I do think that the women's break and run percentage, when you said 15 out of 24 was the high watermark, that's going to get beat.
I think so too.
I think that it's possible that if, for example, if Kelly was one of the 15s, you know, if she's already got her set locked up and she, you know what I mean? This, the motivation level may be different compared to like when you need to run out more. I think that number is going to be beat.
Well, yeah, actually,
how many in the finals, Nate?
There'll be 12. There'll be 12 finals that make the playoffs.
That make the playoffs.
12
yeah.
will make the playoffs. Yes. Kelly. Kelly Fisher almost didn't even make the playoffs, Demetrius.
Right.
Pia Filler had to. If Pia Filler broke and ran her rack, her very last rack, she would have actually eliminated Kelly Fisher, but then she had that double 3-point violation.
That was pretty exciting.
I'm going to have to go back and watch this. I can't believe
it. It was fun to watch.
It just seems like, and I mean, listen, I'm no stranger to the nine ball ghost, okay? When you break and you have a dead wing ball and you spread the rack apart, I've seen Kelly play 10 ball. I don't understand why she wouldn't. I do understand everybody can have a bad day and pressure's tough, and trust me, I get that. But, you know, I'm surprised that the runouts aren't even higher. But I'll have to go back and watch it myself.
I'll say this. I don't think you quite respect the three-point rule maybe as much as – because the men never play by a three-point rule ever. I don't think you realize maybe how tough that can be. And it doesn't even always have to be because of anything that you do, right? I mean, we've all seen where the one ball goes off the jaw, comes back down. You make your wing ball. So the one ball comes back and maybe kicks another ball that's heading up table, and it turns out you only get one ball across the headstring with one ball being made. That happens – a decent amount. You never really know how the rack is going to go. So I think the 3-point rule adds a little wrinkle into there, where if you get the double one, I mean, it's almost like tennis, right? Where in tennis,
it's a big wrinkle.
Well, yes, but yes, absolutely. But it's like tennis where your first swing at a serve, you hit it as hard as you possibly can and you try to place it, because you know that if you don't succeed and you hit it into the net or you hit it out of bounds, that you get another swing. And the second one, you kind of take a little bit off. You can always try to take a little bit off in, you know, the first one. You can always hit the first one a little bit softer and try to control your balls. But then once you have your first 3-point rule violation, the second one is like the opposite of tennis. You got to crack at it just to try to save your inning. And, you know, obviously when you start cracking at them to try to get the balls up table as best you can, you lose a little bit of control. Maybe you scratch. And even if you hit them really hard, you're still not guaranteed anything across the headstring. So, yes, you're guaranteed to not scratch. Of course, well, I shouldn't say that. You're not guaranteed to not scratch. You're guaranteed to not break dry. But you're not guaranteed to even, you know, you can make two balls each time and still not succeed the 3-point rule. And that's kind of similar to breaking dry, I would say, in the 10 ball. It happens about as often as a 3-point violation. Maybe not quite as much, but what we were seeing, you know, you broke 24 out of 24. I think Albin broke in 24 out of 24 or 23 out of 24. He scratched maybe, but it wasn't uncommon to have 20 to 24 successful breaks out of the 24. The men have pretty much in the VG10, what we've seen is figured out that break and figured out how to make a ball every time.
The top breakers in that field are breaking exceptionally. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say that the 3-point rule violation is actually probably going to be pretty close to the succeeding rate of making a ball in the break for the men. I don't know that to be true, but that's just kind of what I've saw from the small sample size.
You're right. You've kind of got me. You kind of talked me out of this one because I think you're right. I think that I could figure out the break, and I think that the level of breaking will improve to this next event. It just seems like you can break with a little high ball, pull the one ball back in the side pocket, get the one in the kitchen, get the back ball is going to hit the back rail, and I mean the two ball if it's in the back should really ought to come through the kitchen. So it's like, I don't know, man. It doesn't seem like it should be that much of a problem. And then with two swings at it, it seems like it should even be less. However, you make a good point, which is if Alvin's going to break wet, you know, 24 out of 24, except for maybe one or two weird hiccups or kisses or scratches. And then with their breaking so well with a 10 ball break, they're breaking the balls to the side. They're not getting a lot of clusters. And then Alvin and those guys shoot so straight that even when they do get something where it's glue eye and funny, they just get on the ball and run it past the side pocket up table and run out anyway. It's pretty tough to beat somebody that can put together 22 out of 24 racks. So you got a good point, man. You got a good point. I think that's considering that you're going to have some of the top tier when you got people like Fedor, Elbin, you know, Jim Telfer. I mean, he's playing great. Seriously, it's hard to beat. So
yeah,
the ball in hand, you know, with the ghost is just a huge deal. I mean, that changes the whole game.
Yeah.
Well, and with the break, it's like a strike, right? You know, so it's like when you have a really, really, really top-tier striker, the level of consistency on the break is just amazing. I would say, though, you know, that like you're kind of to your point, if you know, depending on the level of the players, you know, there are women in the world that I think could beat Alvin. You know, like for example, if you put Sabine Chen in there with those break rules on the nine ball, I think that she would win. So I don't think that I just think that it's just a matter of if you have the absolute world champion 10 ball players or nine ball, you know, for the men, then it takes a world champion women's player to compete with a world champion's men player. That's what I'd say.
Let's take a guess at how many men and how many women are going to be in the finals. You said there's 8 in the last group.
12.
12?
12, yep. And theoretically, there's, you know, you could, we're not doing a random draw, so there's zero possibility. Well, I shouldn't say we're not going to do a random draw. We are not going to do a draw where, you know, you could have 4 women in one bracket, or you could have 4 men in one, or 3 men and 1 woman, or, you know, anything like that.
I hear you.
We are going to have it to where you have to have 2 men and 2 women out of everything, because then it's a true battle of the sexes. You're actually seeing on every single match, or every single pool, I should say, where this is a thing. So
that's the preliminary rounds, right?
For the 2
and yes. 2.
Yep. So with that being said, it's very possible to have no men or no women into the final 12, and that's that just is what it is, you know.
So, yeah, I'll go with 4 women and 8 men.
That's exactly 12. What I was going to say. 8 and 4.
I say it depends entirely on who ends up playing in this. Of course, we haven't sent out invites yet, but I know that there's a few women and there's a few men that are in no matter what. And to be honest with you, there's a lot of the men that I'm much more happy to work with. I think all of the women, for the most part, were very easy to work with. There was a few that aren't as tech savvy and aren't as marketing savvy, but for the most part, the women were significantly easier to work with. I don't know exactly who I'm going to be inviting for the men yet. I don't know if I'm going to pick the people that I enjoyed working with or the people that would make the event the best. I haven't decided that quite yet. So,
well, combo of both.
Well, maybe. But there's some people that are very difficult to work with for the men that, you know, I don't know exactly how to do it. So I'm going to decide later on, I guess. And it just is what it is. So, I thought that was a neat idea. We could have a discussion about it and maybe get some.
It's a great tournament. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
I think so too. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah,
be another one. Maybe I'll even spend some time watching.
Yeah. All right. Well, that kind of draws to a close what I had on my docket. I'm not sure. Did either of you guys have anything that fired you up through the course of this conversation that we can talk about?
Well, I have a question for you two guys, just out of the blue, I'm going to ask you a straightforward question. Who do you think in your life, out of all the pool players you've played against or have seen play, has the best stroke. Okay, I'll give you a couple of seconds to dwell. I've thought about this a lot because I, of course, was going to ask this question.
I've got a stealthy one. Go ahead, Dave. I'll let you answer it first.
Well, when you're saying this, are you talking about amateurs, pros, or anything?
Yeah, anybody.
Well, I mean, of course, Chris Melling is known for his stroke. I mean, he's got one of the biggest strokes in the world. James Aranis has a pretty huge stroke. So does Jeffrey DeLuna. I would say as far as the biggest stroke that I've ever seen, it wasn't a
I'm
pool player.
I'm not saying biggest. I'm saying the best.
Well,
the
then
most
precise,
the most precision. You incorporate all the – doesn't have to be the biggest stroke or the strongest or whatever. This is just the best stroke. So incorporate all those aspects of the stroke.
Well, I would say if you want to incorporate everything, you can't make a list without having Kelly Fisher on it. Her stroke is absolutely massive, and she's very controlled with it, like almost gross how controlled she is with it. I mean that's a player. I would say Chris Melling is another player, Jeffrey DeLuna, James Aranis. That would be my list, I guess.
Yeah. I'm going to blow your mind with my pick.
I'll go next because I wonder.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Siming Chen. I think I've watched her play a ton. I was actually just watching. They just posted on AZ Billiards. She was playing in a Chinese 8-ball tournament against the world number one, and she just plays. I watch her play, and what strikes me about it is, it's her cue moves slow. Her timing, her accuracy, her precision, and the lack of any wobble or any unnecessary energy or fidgety energy or movement. It's repeatability and it's accuracy, both elevated level, off rails, over balls, on the break. It's amazing. She gets up there. She does the same thing every time. She addresses the ball. Her stroke, her warm-up strokes get shorter, 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 come to a pause. A smooth backswing to a hang, a nice, smooth, accelerating forward, exactly straight, very, very precise hit on the cue ball. And maybe I'm being biased by her striking. It's just like her tip accuracy and striking on the object ball, her speed, her acceleration, everything. I just feel like if there's one person where I can look at their game and say, bottle that, that's how pool should look. I mean, she's not the best player in the world, but I think that's – as good as pool can look is
the best
stroke. Place.
Yeah,
I think so.
I like what you said when you said the straightness, the purity of the straightness of her stroke, because that's one thing that I look for when I watch other pool players play. Their finish, how straight is it? And you're going to be surprised at my pick because they're not a professional player. And you might not even know this person. Most people listening to this will probably know this amateur. But definitely, by far, for all those reasons you just said, Demi, this guy would fit into that category. His name is Jason Kirkwood.
Oh, I know Jason.
And when the very first time I saw him play, I walked away thinking I've never seen such a straight, pure stroke ever in my life. And it's never changed. Every time I've seen him play after that, it's been a while since I've seen him play, probably 8 or 9 years. And I don't know if he gets out and plays much anymore at all. But yeah, if anybody's watched him play, you got to walk away from that going, wow, what a pure stroke.
The listener, I got to share this for the listeners. I saw him play. He was playing Bobby Pickle at the Derby City back when they had a big action pit before the action got kind of tapped down, and they were playing 10 ahead bar table 9-ball for a large sum of money, and they were playing to where they started off by pounding 4 beers, and every 15 minutes they had to pound another beer, and the rules were they couldn't go to the bathroom, and so they had to play 10 ahead until somebody either got 10 ahead, passed out, or wet their pants. I might be wrong on this, but if
I think Pickle won. He's a bigger guy.
I think that Kirkwood won. Huh. And then, and it's okay. Now I'm just a little hazy on this, so I don't want to I believe from what memory and rumor recall that Kirkwood won, and then after winning the bet, passed out and wet his pants. But I might be wrong on that. I might be wrong on that. Anyway, I can speak factually about the match and the way the rules were negotiated. And I got to see a big chunk of that. It was very entertaining.
Yeah, entertaining. Bobby's an entertaining player to watch. He was. I've watched him play a little bit. Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the shot clock on that was about 3 seconds, and that was not because they wanted to shoot fast. It's because they were trying to get as many games in before they pissed themselves as possible, right?
I just don't really understand, like, what would prompt somebody to enter into a bit. You know, it just goes to show. That's what
pretty
makes,
funny stuff.
That's what makes, you know, and people that are like, yeah, we got to clean up pool. I don't know, man. That was pretty
memorable.
I mean,
you got two great amateur pool players there that could be pros. Yeah. I mean, they could be.
Jason Kirkwood's one of the best
Kirkwood
bar table players.
I was at a tournament, the Midwest Nine Ball Tour, Olathe, where actually I had me and somebody else had bought Kirkwood. He was at the wild card in the Calcutta.
Oh.
There was, trust me, there was, you know, top players in this tournament as far as like top U.S. players, and Kirkwood showed up. He showed up just not late for the tournament, but late for the Calcutta. So when he showed up, he asked, hey, what did you buy me for? And I can't remember if it was like $750 or something. And he looks at me and the person that bought him, he says, can I buy all of me for $900? So like he was offering us $150 instant profit. And I'm like, man,
I love it. I just love it.
He's very confident. So we ended up declining that. We took half of him. And so I had a quarter of him. He ended up winning that thing, 128 player field. And
I can't believe it.
That was a good decision to not buy. So anyway, I'm a big believer in how he strikes the balls too. Yeah,
yeah. I watched him play a match with Ty Wilson, in Vegas in one of the BCA tournaments out there, and it was the most incredible race of 7-8 ball on a bar table I'd ever seen between these two guys. It was something to see.
Yeah, he plays a lot of bar table, but then somebody says, "Well, does he play big table?" And the other person said, he'll play anything with round balls. Like, if the ball's around, the guy can play. He can play it all, yeah. Oh.
I watched him in a tournament it was a bar table tournament, 8-ball tournament, miss. It was partners, and he was playing with a rich Schmeling thing or something like that from, I can't remember his last name. But I saw him miss a ball, right? He never misses balls. He just doesn't. And he put his stick by the table, and there was an exit in this big ballroom we were in, and a back door to, and it was, you're not supposed to exit there. He walked out of the ballroom. There's 40 pool tables in this big ballroom. He just walked out, put his stick down and walked out.
Well,
left the tournament.
I'll tell you, if I quit pool every time I missed a ball, that'd be pretty inconvenient. I'd be putting a lot of miles on my car driving back and forth.
But I'll never forget it.
That's weird.
But I'll tell you this, Demetrius, you'd have a lot more open time.
Yeah, well, he figured, he wasn't going to get another turn because it's partners. And, you know, so he just left.
Yeah. All right.
But anyways, I just throw that out to see what you guys thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's cool. It's cool to think about what we consider to be a good stroke, because, you know, I was weighted towards, you know, the precision and the elegance, and Nate was kind of thinking about players that have a lot of, power and fluidity. And then and then yours was more about like the kind of the straight and the finish and kind of what it looks like going through the ball. So all good answers, and let's be fair. I think all three of us would trade with any of those people. So. Good enough.
Yes, for sure.
Yep. All right. Well, we can draw this to a close then at this point. This is a short episode.
A little limerick. I got one here.
Oh, okay.
A little limerick before we leave. This is from a book that was written in 1943, and it was given to my wife's dad by his brother. So these are how old? 70 years? Little Willie from the mirror sucked the mercury all off, thinking in his childish error it would cure the whooping cough. At the funeral, his weeping mother smartly said to Mrs. Brown, 'Twas a chilly day for Willie when the mercury went down.
Okay, I think I get it.
Yeah. Sucked the mercury off the mirror.
Oh, man. Well, okay. So this one, I'll share a limerick I wrote for you guys might get a kick out of this. It starts about poker, but you'll see the tie-in with bullets. There once was a rounder named Faust who tilted each pot that he'd lost. When his aces would crack, he'd punt off his stack and announced he'd retired like Scott Frost.
Yeah, it sounds all big. That's good. I like it. Put the freezer in there.
Yeah, I just think that when somebody retires from pool, I always get a kick out of when people retire. It's like, what does that even mean? And then they always see him playing tournaments anyway and matches. And it's anyway, so okay, never mind. Yeah, inside joke, limerick.
Here's one more, and then I'll be done with it. This is a short one. Women's faults are many. Men have only two. Everything they say and everything they do.
Very nice.
And it's true. All right. Well, now I can draw this to a close. No more silliness out of you two. Well, Demetrius, Rob, thanks again for joining me this week. I always appreciate it.
Okay. Hey, you guys. It was a lot of fun. We did a lot of gabbing.
Good times.
All right.
Thanks so much. And I hope everyone enjoyed. I'll talk to you guys again soon.
Yep.
Okay, Demi.
Yep. Take care, everyone. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.